Hello and welcome in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean. And just like that, we are cruising through the college football season. Another great weekend of college football action down, and another great weekend coming up that I can't wait to preview. So for today's episode, for our week two recap portion of the episode, what I think I'm going to do is run through our Big Ten power rankings 1 through 18 and give you a little bit of a snapshot of what we've seen out of each team through 2 weeks and what we can expect out of them through the rest of the season, because I know there has been a lot to take in through 2 weeks in the Big Ten, a lot of pleasant surprises, a lot of disappointments. It can be really hard to keep track of how well these teams really are playing this early on in the season, but I'll get that covered for you, break down each team really quickly, and to recap last weekend's action. And then, as we preview a great weekend and then we will shift focus to week three. In what's a weaker slate across the country, the Big Ten actually has some really great games. I got 5 that I'm really excited about. I will break down those games and give you my prediction. But first, to recap week two, we'll start off with our Big Ten power rankings. And at the top, this one should be a no-brainer. It's Ohio State. In my mind, from what I've seen through 2 weeks of the college football season, Ohio State is on a different level than everyone else in the Big Ten. Their defense is exactly as dominant as I expected them to be. They've given up 6 points through 2 weeks. Denzel Burke, their All-American cornerback, got ejected in the first quarter last weekend against Western Michigan, and you could have never told by watching the rest of the game. That's just how much talent and depth they have in that secondary. Guys like Arvell Reese are stepping up at linebacker, where kind of they had their only hole. And then their defensive line is proving to be as talented as we expected, but also maybe the deepest in all of college football. So that defense is just so incredible. It's hard to envision really anyone finding a way to put up 20-plus points on this defense. And then you flip to the offensive side of the ball. That's what really makes this offense so potent, is that they don't have to be great, but they are. That offensive line of theirs, even without having their best offensive lineman on the field in Donovan Jackson, controlled the line of scrimmage from beginning to end against Western Michigan, was just utterly dominant. Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, you can tell, are starting to find their rhythm a little bit more. Jeremiah Smith might be the best wide receiver in all of college football, and they still have Carnell Tate and Emeka Ebuka on that team. And then Will Howard. I have been really impressed with Will Howard. His stats aren't eye-popping, but he really has not thrown very many bad balls at all this week through 2 weeks. And he's been a great decision maker, and you've seen he can be a threat with his legs as well. For the first time since 2020, Ohio State had a rushing touchdown from their quarterback, which had to feel good for Buckeye fans. But all in all, I think this team is looking every bit as good as we thought they would be, which is even more impressive when you look at teams like Oregon, who were expected to be up there with Ohio State and aren't quite meeting that standard. So really, when I look at this Big Ten race, I'm at the point now where if you have Ohio State on your schedule, I'm signing you up for a loss. I really think they're going to go undefeated and kind of cruise through this Big Ten schedule. They look that dominant. And I think that's going to make this Big Ten title race for whoever finishes second and faces Ohio State in the Big Ten championship, is going to make it really interesting, because I honestly think anyone ranked 2 through 18 on this power rankings list can honestly beat anyone else on that list on any given weekend. There is a lot of parity in the Big Ten right now, and that much is evident. Number 2, USC. I think one of the biggest surprises in the Big Ten so far is how sharp they have looked through 2 weeks, despite how much they lost. And I honestly might have been more impressed with their shutout win of Utah State this past weekend than I was with their season opener against LSU. It just proves the focus of this team and how seriously they are taking improving the defensive side of the ball. I don't see USC giving up 30-plus points to any of these Big Ten teams, which is something you almost assumed was a given over the past few years with Alex Grinch. Their defense looked really good in week one. Week two confirmed how much this defense is going to improve this season. And with how sharp Miller Moss is playing, he really hasn't made any mistakes yet from the quarterback position. He is running this offense to perfection. And they really integrated the run game a lot better against Utah State as well. With an offense that is looking sharp and figures to continue to improve, and a defense that might follow in Nebraska's footsteps as being the most improved in college football. Considering all that, and the fact that USC does not play Ohio State in the regular season, I really like their chances to have a great season and to potentially get to the Big Ten championship. Number 3, Penn State. I know a lot of fans were conflicted over their tight win over Bowling Green last week, but I think the good news is that last week's game was a game that last year's team would have lost. Nick Singleton is running the ball better than he has in his entire career. He Catron Allen and Tyler Warren, their great tight end, are proving to be game changers in the passing game as really the top options close to the line of scrimmage, and they're utilizing Harrison Wallace and Omari Evans to really be those deep threats. And they're connecting on deep balls, which is great to see. They're able to generate chunk plays, which is not something they were able to do really at all last season. I'm still not completely sold on Drew Aller. His decision-making and his accuracy have still both been inconsistent, but the offense as a whole is so much better than last year, and he doesn't have to be all that accurate because Andy Kotelnicki, their new offensive coordinator, is doing a great job of utilizing motion and misdirection to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers with some easy throws close to the line of scrimmage. He isn't making a lot of tight dime throws 40 yards down the field. They're not asking him to, and he doesn't need to. The defense is a little bit concerning. They may not be quite as dominant of a unit as I was expecting. They're definitely not a bad unit by any means, but pieces I was really excited about just haven't popped yet. Abdul Carter has been virtually non-existent in his move from linebacker to the bull position. Cam Miller was a cornerback I was really excited about. He's been really quiet. So there's still room to improve, and this is still a team that's going to be in the thick of the Big Ten title race, but I'm still very up in the air about this team. They can just as easily go 11-1 as they could 9-3, and that's where I am at with Penn State right now. Number four is Oregon. It would be very easy to sound the alarms on Oregon based off of what we've seen through 2 weeks, and I know a lot of people already are. Their offensive line has straight up not been good, and this is an offensive line that was supposed to be one of the best in all of college football this season. Their defense is clearly full of standouts and potential NFL starters, but they just don't seem to be playing on the same page every single snap. They've fallen asleep at points, which has given up big plays, and Ashton Jeanty, Boise State's All-American running back, tore them up last week. It's something to be expected because Jeanty's going to do that to a lot of teams, but if you have national championship expectations, you don't expect to then give up 200 yards on the ground to a running back. I think it was also really understated how much turnover this team was enduring from last year. They have at least one key transfer at virtually every single position group. Boise State is not an easy team to play in week two, no matter how badly their defense did play against Georgia Southern in that opener. So I think getting the win against Boise State was more important than anything. I was impressed by their resilience because there was a point in that game where you definitely felt like Boise State had captured momentum and Oregon could have just rolled on their side and let that happen, but they didn't. They found out a way to win, and that's the most important thing. And coming up, they have a road trip to Oregon State. I'll talk about this game towards the end of the episode, but I expect another dogfight in this game. I don't think it's going to be a dominant victory. But then they get their bye week, and then they play against UCLA. So if they struggle against UCLA after that bye week like they have through 2 weeks, and like I expect them to do again this weekend against Oregon State, then I'll sound the alarms. But I think a lot of this can be contributed to just growing pains with the turnover and dealing with the expectations and having a difficult schedule to start the season. I think a lot of their struggles can be attributed to that. If it does leak into their opener against UCLA, then I'll flag the alarms. Until then, I know how much talent is on this team. I know how good Dalen Gabriel is. That should be enough to keep their head above water for now. Number five, Nebraska. It's hard to have anything negative to say about their play through 2 weeks. Dylan Raiola is everything you could have hoped he would be as a true freshman. He's processing and reading plays like a veteran, and he's showing you the ability to make game-changing throws while also taking care of the football. He hasn't thrown an interception yet. They have a stable of running backs. Isaiah Nair looks like a great pickup at the wide receiver position. And their defense, we knew they would be great this year, and they seem to have improved a lot from last year. And I think now you can say, after what they did to Colorado this past weekend, they are certifiably an elite defense under Matt Rhule and Tony White. That being said, I do have some of my concerns that I think will impede Nebraska from becoming a college football playoff contender this season. I didn't really like the way that they closed out the game against Colorado. In the second half, their two opening drives totaled 7 plays and took 3 minutes off the clock. They then did have a nice 50-yard drive that started inside their 10 to get out of the back of their own end zone. But they got into Colorado territory, could not get any points, and then that drive, they followed it up with a quick 3-and-out. So really, their offense gave Colorado every chance to get back in that game. So credit to Nebraska's defense for standing pat and not letting that happen, but not every opponent is in as much disarray as Colorado is right now, and not every team that they play is going to miss 3 field goals. It was a great win, I think a program-defining win for Matt Rhule as he tries to rebuild Nebraska, and it's hard to walk away from that game being the skeptic, but It is worth noting that after they play Northern Iowa this weekend, they play Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, and Indiana. All of those teams are better than I think a lot of people expected them to be this season. And that's all before they play Ohio State. So a lot of people are already chalking Nebraska up to a 7-0 start. They are back. They're going to be in the CFP. They're going to fight for the Big Ten title. A lot of people are already penciling them in for that course of action. And I would say just hold on for a second, because even though he's a true freshman, Dylan Raiola did not have to face a lot of adversity in that game. And their offense did not do a great job of holding on to that lead, killing some clock, and not letting Colorado have a chance to get back in that game. So for those reasons, I'm still a little bit skeptical. They're still number 5 team in the Big Ten right now. Still love the direction of their program. Still love their chances to get 8, 9, maybe even 10 wins this season. But let's hold on. I'm penciling them in for a 7-0 start, because that would be quite the feat. Number 6, I have the Michigan Wolverines coming off of that home beatdown at the hands of Texas. And I didn't walk away from that game blown away by Texas and thinking they were a really dominant team. They looked great, don't get me wrong. And Quinn Ewers came into the season as my Heisman favorite. He remains at that spot through 2 weeks. But I came away from that game thinking Michigan was in much worse shape than I had originally thought. The interior of that offensive line struggled again, could not really get any push in the run game or any consistent push in the run game that required. And it seems like this offensive line is far away from being the kind of offensive line that really requires teams to stack the box in order to stop the run. And with the way Davis Warren looked, offensive line did hold up in pass protection pretty well, but Davis Warren needs more than a clean pocket in order to be effective. Wide receivers once again had a bad day. Doesn't really seem like there is a reliable receiver on this team outside of Colston Loveland. Receivers were not on the same page as Davis Warren. The few times they did seem to get open against Texas seemed like it was half a bad throw by Davis Warren and half a bad catch, just went off their hands because the ball wasn't where they were expecting it to be. They had some deep shots, which Davis Warren was able to connect to later in the game when it was really all out of hand, which made their offensive numbers look more respectable than they actually were. But that offense got manhandled and they really were never in the game. Their defense is still great. I love a lot of the pieces they have on defense, but they are far from the 85 Bears, and they really need to be the 85 Bears in order to get this team to championship caliber with the way this offense is playing. I think the defense, the offensive line, their offensive skill position players, and their quarterback all took a major step back from last year, and I haven't really seen them improve enough in any other areas to make up a significant chunk of that difference. So I think either Davis Warren needs to improve a lot in a really short amount of time, or they need to incorporate those other quarterbacks and try to get creative on offense. If one of those two things doesn't happen, I think Michigan is looking at an 8, maybe even a 7 win team. At least that's how they looked on Saturday. Number 7 is Rutgers. And I think Ethan Calligmanis, that transfer quarterback from Minnesota, he is exactly who Rutgers needs him to be. A reliable decision maker and reliable with his accuracy, can stretch the field with his arm and make plays with his legs when needed. He's not necessarily a quarterback that's going to be the reason why Rutgers wins a football game, but he also doesn't look like the kind of quarterback that's going to lose them games either. I am still concerned about their situation at pass catcher, because outside of Demir Miller, it doesn't really look like anyone else is stepping up, and I thought they had a lot deeper unit this year and we'd see more playmakers step up at wide receiver, but no one really has so far. So that is a concern, but I think Kyle Manungai, their potential Heisman candidate at running back, this offensive line and their defense all look plenty good enough to win despite not having an elite passing attack, as long as Ethan Calligmanis continues to just take care of the ball and make good decisions. They have a bye week this week, and then they have a massive road game coming up against Virginia Tech after the bye, and then a really manageable Big Ten schedule. And I think if they can get by that trip to Blacksburg, which is going to be a tough win, don't get me wrong, but I think if they can get by that, I think 10 wins is in the cards for Rutgers. And who knows, a 10-2 season might be good enough for Rutgers to get into the college football playoff, which is outrageous to think about. But I think that's really where we are with Rutgers. They have looked good. They continue to improve along the line of scrimmage and on defense. And they finally have a quarterback that just won't lose them the game. And that's honestly all they've been asking for. So I really like Rutgers prospects, and they are my number 7 team right now. Number 8, probably the biggest surprise in the Big Ten so far, Illinois. And they just came over a top 25 win against Kansas at home. Great game. Was arguably, that was probably the biggest win this program has had in quite some time. at least since they beat Penn State in that 8 overtime thriller a few years ago. But the offensive line is playing much better. They have kept Luke Altmyer upright, and Altmyer has now been able to show what he can do with a clean pocket, both with his arm and his legs, because he's a really underrated athlete. Pat Bryant, Zachary Franklin, and Malik Elzey look like a really great trio of wide receivers, and they're being more committed to the run game. Yeah, Aiden Loffrey and Caden Feagan look like a really, at the very least, reliable duo of running backs to lean on through the long, hard Big Ten football season. So honestly, top to bottom, I really like what I'm seeing out of this offense, and I think this is going to be a really difficult unit to stop as we enter conference play. And the defense is creating turnovers and those big plays that Brett Bielema likes to force. The secondary is bending in these first two games, but they haven't really broken. Xavier and Miles Scott both look like potential NFL defensive backs and future NFL draft picks. They have been stars on that side of the ball. If you're an Illinois fan, I'm sure you are riding high off of that win from Kansas and thinking you can cruise to a 6-7 win season. But now is not the time to rest on your laurels, because despite their success and despite how much Illinois has improved from last year, I'm still concerned about what's going on in the trenches. Their run game did generate only 2.3 yards per carry against Kansas, and the defensive line, you can tell, is really missing Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton. I think if Kansas had committed more to the run game and just run the ball in the second half rather than continuing to put it in Jalen Daniels' hands and have him turn the ball over so many times, if they committed to the run game, you could easily argue that Kansas would have won that game. They have Central Michigan this weekend. Got to make sure they don't overlook that game, because the MAC has been playing a lot better than people probably expected this season. But after that, they play Nebraska and Penn State. And those are two teams that will be even more difficult to stop on the ground. And both of those teams will not mind running the ball 40 times if that's what it takes to beat them. And then later in the season, Illinois has a stretch of Michigan, Oregon, and Minnesota. Teams that are really good in the trenches, on the line of scrimmage. So they need to improve in that area quickly in order to hang with these teams, or this really good start could fall by the wayside and they could end up missing out on a bowl game for the second straight season. Number 9, Indiana Hoosiers. And they have a game this weekend coming up against UCLA, which I will talk about later in this episode. And that is probably the most excited I've been for an Indiana football game since the COVID season, when they went on that magical run. I could easily be overreacting because of weak competition, but Curtis Rourke, their quarterback, looks like a point guard with his ability to quickly distribute the ball and get it out to his variety of playmakers that he has at wide receiver and at running back. Offensive line is the best it's looked since the Big Ten expanded just over a decade ago. And I said this about USC, but I think you could also say this about Indiana, that they might be following in Nebraska's footsteps from last year of being the most improved defense in college football, with guys like Aiden Fisher stepping up. He's their leader at linebacker. He's a potential All-Big Ten guy. It's hard to take a lot from their 77-point win that they had over Western Illinois, because they played a team that hasn't won a game since 2021, but I just saw dominance from beginning of the game to the very end of the game, and that is something that we have not seen out of an Indiana football team in a very long time. Their performance against UCLA this weekend is going to tell us a lot. But I think the fact that they are favored in a road Big Ten game, just three games into Kurt Cignetti's tenure here, tells you how much they've improved in such a short time. And I think this weekend is going to be the nation's introduction to Kurt Cignetti's version of Indiana football. Number 10, the Iowa Hawkeyes. I can't help but sigh, and just, you know, thinking about how the game transpired for them this past weekend. Really a masterclass on how to blow a game, especially a game where you are just so clearly the better team. It was tough to watch, but at the end of the day, it was the same old Iowa, and I feel stupid for thinking that something changed on offense. Tim Lester, he ended up getting cute with his play calling in the second half instead of just letting Caleb Johnson touch the ball 50 times, because he was being that dominant. He decided to get cute and have Cade McNamara throw the ball across his body a couple times, and it was just, offense got ugly really quick in that game. And even the defense, they were mainly dominant on Saturday, but they had defensive miscommunications in that secondary. One led to a 75-yard touchdown bomb, and the other led to a 30-yard completion with under 30 seconds left in the game that set up that game-winning field goal. And I think that, more so than what we saw on the offensive side of the ball, might have been the most concerning part, seeing this veteran secondary coming up with big missed plays, which resulted in points for Iowa State and ultimately cost them the game. Iowa having a mind-numbingly bad offense is almost to be expected at this point, but when their defense gives up plays like that that cost them the game, that can be a little bit concerning. And I think another thing to take away from this game is this was not a great Iowa State team that Iowa blew this game to. So I can't even give them that excuse. At least they're lost to a team that's going to win 10 games this season. I didn't get that impression from Iowa State whatsoever. Their defense shouldn't duplicate that performance. I don't expect them to, and I expect this defense to play well enough to keep them in most games the rest of the season. But at the end of the day, I just can't believe anything on offense is going to change anymore as long as Kirk Ferentz is their head coach. And I think this is just back to same old Iowa. They still might find their way to 8, 9, maybe even 10 wins, but it certainly will not be on the back of this offense or Cade McNamara or Tim Lester. And I am sorry for misleading my audience last week by thinking that something had changed. It clearly has not. Number 11, Purdue. And this is a tough team to get a read on because they've only had to play one game. That was against Indiana State in the opener. So definitely hard to gauge, but we will learn a lot more about this program and where they really stand in their home game against Notre Dame this weekend. Regardless, even if they come up short against Notre Dame, even if they get blown out, I'm still really excited about the future of this program. The defense looks sharper and seemed to know their assignments much better in that opener against Indiana State. Graham Harrell put together his best day as a play caller, and Hudson Card showed exactly why he was a top 200 prospect. He went 24 for 25 passing and had some absolutely beautiful throws. And the offense has a lot more receiving options than I thought. And I still think that this is one of the most underrated offensive lines in college football. So they have a lot of things going for them this season. And even if it doesn't work out for them this season, I think that they will eventually get there under Ryan Walters. We're going to learn a ton in that Notre Dame game this weekend, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. Number 12, Washington Huskies. And I've been pleasantly surprised with them so far. Will Rogers, I think, has proven to be more than just a check down merchant and just a veteran that you can plug in and get some good decision making out of. He's been able to stretch the field with his arm. And Arizona transfer running back Jonah Coleman and Cal transfer wide receiver Jeremiah Hunter, they both look like the game-changing additions that I expected them to be coming into this season. Offensive line is still my biggest concern for this team, and they still have not been tested because they had pretty weak competition in these first 2 weeks. But I've been impressed that they've been able to hold up as well as they have so far. But I definitely need to see more from that offensive line before I can deem this a quality offense that's capable of helping Washington finish with a winning record. The defense, though, has really looked great. Alfonso Tupitala is one of the country's best linebackers. Zach Durfee, he's looked really good at defensive end. He looks like he can be that guy that can harass the quarterback. Secondary still has plenty of talent despite how much they lost last year, and I've been really impressed with what I've seen out of the Huskies' defensive side of the football. Again, we're going to learn a lot more about them this weekend when they host Washington State, who has looked really good through 2 games as well. So a lot more to learn about them, and we'll talk about that game coming up. But for now, Washington is 12th. And number 13, going to go with Minnesota. Honestly, last week's 48-0 win over Rhode Island didn't change anything in my mind about how I perceive this football team. It's good that they got Darius Taylor back. I'm sure he'll continue to improve throughout the season and get back to his old self. And the defense is great. Defense was not the reason at all that they lost that opener against North Carolina. And the offensive line is holding up in the trenches too and generally protecting Max Brosmer. I just don't think Brax Moser can do enough to keep this offense's head above water. I think, especially when you consider how many other Big Ten quarterbacks are playing really well and having career years and setting their offenses up to improve from last year, I think when you consider all that, it's hard to envision Minnesota staying in the thick of the Big Ten throughout this season when they have, I think, in my opinion, the worst quarterback play in all of the Big Ten. Number 14, Wisconsin. And really, this offense continues to look like it just does not have an identity. It wants to be this team that kind of throws it sideline to sideline to get guys open in space and use some tempo and quarterback rollouts to put stress on the defense. That's who they want to be, but they just don't have the personnel for that. I don't think their offensive struggles are necessarily Tyler Van Dyke's fault. I think he's mainly been doing what the coaching staff has asked of him, but I'm just not intimidated by any aspect of this offense and what they're able to do for defenses. If they committed more to a downhill running attack, they have 3 good running backs. If they tried their best to get them all 10-12 touches a game, I think that might be a recipe for success, especially given how this defense looks. But that's just not who they are trying to be with offensive coordinator Phil Longo. And it also doesn't help that their offensive line is, once again, really underperforming. Thought we'd see a big step forward from them this season after a disappointing performance last year, but really just looks like more of the same. That being said, defense does look great. Defensive line looks a lot better than it did last year, and Hunter Waller and Ricardo Hallman are still one of the best defensive back duos in all of college football. So I think this defense should be good enough to keep them in most games. But Wisconsin plays Alabama and USC coming up in consecutive games. And I think their offense will be exposed and leave this defense out to dry. I don't think their offense will be able to possess the ball well enough and keep the ball out of both of those elite quarterbacks' hands. As good as I think this Wisconsin defense is, if they're on the field for 40 minutes against an offense like Alabama or USC, eventually they're going to fold. Number 15, Michigan State. And I will give their offense credit. They played a lot better this past weekend against Maryland. Aiden Childs was more accurate. Their offensive line played a lot better. And generally, there was just a lot more to like from their offense. They put up almost 500 yards. They found success on the ground and through the air. But despite that, they still had 3 turnovers and 9 penalties. And that was really the reason the game was as close as it was, because for a majority of the game, Michigan State appeared to be dominating and looked like they were heading to a good win. And they just kept making these boneheaded mistakes, which let Maryland keep clasping to life. That being said, that matchup against Maryland, it didn't look like two teams that would be competing to get into the top 25. It didn't look like the matchup of a couple teams that would finish the season with 8 or 9 wins. It looks like two of the bottom feeders in the Big Ten, and that's what we expected them to be coming into this season. It reminded me of that Nebraska-Northwestern game that opened up the season a couple years ago. It was an entertaining game, but you can just tell sometimes when you're watching two teams play that they're just not going to be a huge factor in the Big Ten race, and that's the vibe I got from Michigan State and Maryland. Good to see their offense improve as much as they did, and their defense still looks like they've taken a big step forward from last season, but I feel like there's just a lot to clean up, and once they get into the thick of the Big Ten schedule, it'll be hard for them to compete with this many mistakes. But that's not to say a bowl game is out of question, and I still do believe in the direction of this program under Arthur Smith. But as far as this year is concerned, I feel like Michigan State being ranked 15th is about what you'd expect. Number 16, the team that Michigan State just beat, Maryland. I think their offensive line struggles really reared its ugly head again, got really overwhelmed by Michigan State's front. And too much of this offense fell on Billy Edwards' shoulders because of that. And even though I'm really impressed with how much he's developed as a passer, I don't think he's at that level yet of really being able to shoulder an offense by throwing the ball, 40 times a game. I don't think he's there yet. And secondary was feast or famine, came up with 3 turnovers, but got beat over the top a lot. And honestly, this Maryland team, just top to bottom on offense and defense, looked a lot more like the team I was expecting to see coming into the season. I think I overreacted a little bit when they spanked UConn like they did. But again, I did not love what I saw out of Mike Locksley's crew on Saturday. And that's why I have him at 16th. 17, Northwestern. They have scored 33 points and put up about 600 yards of total offense across 2 games against 2 of the easier teams on their entire schedule. I'm surprised at how well they seem to have re-pieced the secondary together. And Cam Porter, their running back, he looks to have really developed as an athlete and as a runner a lot more, and he's a much better running back than I've given him credit for. But Mike Wright, their quarterback who they brought in from the transfer portal, he just is not a serious threat as a thrower. And I don't think this offensive line is good enough to sustain long drives, which is really the recipe that they have to go for with their passing game struggling like it is. And defense, even though I do a lot of pieces there, I just don't think they have enough great athletes to withstand being on the field for 2/3 of the game, which is how the season is looking like it's going to play out. I think Northwestern was fortunate to get to overtime against Duke. And, like I said this coming into the season, Northwestern had a lot of luck in one possession games last season, came out, had the ball roll their way a few times, and that's generally not something you see carry over season to season. So I think Northwestern, their defense and play style is good enough to stay in a lot of games. I'm just not sure that they'll get the bounces they need to finish with a winning record this season. And finally, number 18, my last team in the Big Ten right now, is UCLA. I was definitely impressed by their defense in that opener against Hawaii, but I was really alarmed by Ethan Garber's decision-making. He's a 6th-year guy. He started a handful of games in his career. I thought he could be a veteran presence for this offense and at least take care of the football, but he really struggled with that. Offense as a whole really could not get anything going until later in the game. They did get a bye week to now regroup and prepare for this game against Indiana. I could be proven wrong because it's hard to get a read on a team after just one game, but I don't have high expectations for UCLA the rest of the season based off of how sloppy that game was against Hawaii. And those are our post-Week 2 Big Ten power rankings. Feel like we finally have seen enough to get some sort of pulse on the hierarchy in the Big Ten, but there is surely a lot to change over the next few weeks and really over the course of the season. But now we can pivot away from week two and look forward to week three. We got five games that I'm really excited for in the Big Ten. And I will start off with, once again, our lone Big Ten matchup of the weekend. That's Indiana traveling to the Rose Bowl to face UCLA. And I just like what I've seen out of Indiana's line of scrimmage way too much for me to think that they won't win this game. Both their offensive and defensive line playing, like I said before, arguably better than they have at any point since the Big Ten expanded over 10 years ago. Curtis Rourke is everything that Ethan Garbers wasn't in week one. He's a quick decision maker. He gets the ball out quickly and accurately, really anywhere within 15 yards. He seems very reliably accurate. And like I said before, he's like playing a point guard with the amount of options he has at wide receiver and at running back to throw the ball to. Indiana really does have an embarrassment of riches at the offensive skill position. And I think that's just something that UCLA's defense won't be prepared to see. And what I also love about Indiana is just Kurt Cignetti's focus. And you could tell when he was interviewed this week talking about this game and talking about how cool it will be for so many of his players to be at the Rose Bowl, arguably the greatest sports stadium in the entire country. He's not looking at it like that. It is a business trip for them, and he wants to make sure that his players are not starry-eyed walking into that stadium. They're going to be there for business, and they're going to be there to show the country how far they've come in such a short amount of time. I really like the Hoosiers. I think they're playing the best defense they've played so far, so it might take a while for them to really find their rhythm, but I think they'll run away from the Bruins in the second half. I think this will be a two, maybe even a three-possession game. I've been high on Indiana for a long time, and I think everyone will see why this weekend. And the second game I want to talk about is Alabama traveling to Wisconsin. And in years past, I feel like this is a game that a lot more people would be excited for. This is a game that you would expect College Game Day and Big Noon Kickoff to be at. But it's being a quietly covered game, and a lot of that has to do with seemingly how quickly Wisconsin has fallen off as a program. There aren't the same team that dominates you on the line of scrimmage, bloodies you, rushes for 300 yards, dominates the time of possession, and is a kind of game that no one wants to play. I've talked about this a few times already this season about how Phil Longo is trying to force Wisconsin offense to be something that they are not. They're trying to be a quick-hitting offense that gets these guys in space. He calls plays like he has a number of first-round draft picks at wide receiver who can make guys miss in open space and outrun defenses. And he's acting like he has, a CJ Stroud at quarterback with the way he calls plays. And if you've watched Wisconsin at all, you can tell that is not how they are built. And now they play an Alabama team who is struggling to throw the football to start the season. Jalen Milroe, he's a great athlete, has a really talented arm, but he's been a little bit inaccurate. I think Wisconsin's defense does have an opportunity to really stack this box, force his hand to try to make the right play and make it hard to run the ball. That strategy might give up some really big plays because Alabama still has great speed on the outside, but I would trust that strategy because I don't think Jalen Milroe can consistently make the right decision and throw an accurate ball under pressure for four quarters of a football game without having a run game to lean on. Wisconsin has a chance to slow down Alabama's offense. The problem is that I said it before that they're going to be on the field for too long because this Alabama defense gets after you. That interior of the defensive line did get gashed up a little bit when USF got in a groove. They were able to run the ball right up the middle, something that I would hope Wisconsin wants to replicate, but it was as soon as they decided to drop back, as soon as they tried to pull it all around on the outside, USF, Alabama's athletes in space were evident, and they had some big hits, and they had a lot of TFLs in that game. And I just think with Wisconsin, if they try to get Tyler Van Dyke outside of the pocket, if they try to have him hold on to the ball for 3, 4, 5 seconds, if they try to get him to throw the ball 40 times, I think that they're just going to get lit up. I think Alabama's just going to pin their ears back, get after him, force some bad throws. I think their recipe for success is to try to go 3 yards in a cloud of dust, is to try to possess the ball and limit the number of possessions and utilize Tyler Van Dyke's legs in the option game as well. I think that they do have some space to be creative with this offense and keep the ball away from Jalen Milroe, but it just doesn't seem to be what Phil Longo wants to do. And I think because of that, Wisconsin's going to be exposed. And I think a lot of people across the country are going to see just how far off Wisconsin really is from beginning back to becoming a great to elite program. Because I think a lot of people thought when Luke Fickell took over this program that he's just a year or two away from getting this team back into the top 20 and back into the Big Ten title race and back into the CFP race. And now here we are, year two, after a really bad year one, and nothing really has seemed to change. And I think we're all going to be witnesses to that on Alabama. I think Alabama's going to run away with this game, and it won't be particularly close from the get-go. Next up, we have our first rivalry game, Oregon on the road in the Civil War against Oregon State. And this is not going to be an easy game by any means. Oregon State has given up 15 points and 150 rush yards total for through the first two games. Dylan Gabriel, he is still a great quarterback, and I think he'll be able to get the ball to guys like Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart, Jordan James consistently enough to move the ball downfield and ultimately have success against this Beaver defense. But I think this Oregon State defense is strong enough to take advantage of what's been a really struggling offensive line. I think Oregon State will be able to slow down that run game and continue to hass Dylan Gabriel. So Oregon is going to score their points, but I think they're also going to come up short on plenty of drives. On the flip side, Oregon's defense got torn up last week. They fell asleep and gave up a few big plays to Idaho the week before as well. I know that they have great individual players like Jordan Birch and cornerback Jabbar Muhammad, both of them potential All-Americans, but this unit has not resembled the championship-winning defense we expected. We thought this was going to be one of the best defenses in all of college football, and they have looked far from it so far. That being said, Oregon State is going to find it much more difficult to run the ball against Oregon than they have found in their first two games, and I think that's also going to make it more difficult for them to connect on those deep balls, which they have lived on so far. But I also think that there are enough holes on this Oregon defense for Oregon State to find success somewhere. So I really, all in all, I see a relatively evenly matched game through 2 weeks, and I think it benefits Oregon State a lot to have that game at home. Oregon is 2-2 in this rivalry over the past four seasons, with generally being the superior team. Like I said, game is at Oregon State, and rivalries like these do tend to level the playing field a little bit. So even though Oregon is, I think, undoubtedly the more talented team, I'm expecting another really close battle. I don't think Oregon is going to magically fix all of the issues we've seen plague them through 2 weeks, but I also think that they understand the importance of this game, of this rivalry game, and they're not going to come into this game sleepwalking, expecting just to steamroll Oregon State. I think we're going to have a really good game on our hands. I'm seeing something like a 31-26 type game. I do think Oregon ultimately comes out on top. And the fourth game I'm excited for this weekend is Washington State traveling to Washington, another former Pac-12 rivalry game. So glad that these games are staying on the schedule. Washington State's quarterback, Mateer, he is an incredible athlete, great with his legs, and I think he's going to be able to keep this game close with his ability to run and scramble. It will stress this Husky defense unlike anything they've seen so far this season. I think it will be a great test for that unit to see how good they really are. Washington, on the offensive side of the ball, has not had to do too much as far as creativity in their play calling. Will Rogers looks capable of pushing the ball downfield. Jonah Coleman might be one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. So maybe this weekend is the weekend that we see this offense open up and we see what a typical Jed Fish offense, because it has been really conservative so far. But what I think this game really comes down to is performance in the red zone. I think both of these offenses possess the ability to generate mismatches for the defenses, and I think that ultimately both of these offenses will be able to move the ball, but you need to be able to score touchdowns when you get close, and that's an area where Washington has struggled so far. They have not been great in the red area so far this season. So I think this is a really tight game. I'm going to lean with Washington because it's in their house, but if this game were being played at Washington State, I'd probably lean Cougars. I think that's really how close this game is. Like I said about rivalry games, I think especially this early in the season, it really does level the playing field. And honestly, I think teams like Oregon State and Washington State, with the way conference realignment really shook out, where it left them, I think, if anything, they have a little bit of a bone to pick with the two teams that they're playing this weekend, apart from the rivalry. So I think there is a lot to be figured out, and I'm really excited for both of these games this weekend. I think both will be close, but I think Washington and Oregon both remain undefeated. And the last game I want to talk about is Notre Dame's trip to West Lafayette to play Purdue at Ross-Ade Stadium, and I'm so excited for this game, mainly for the environment. I think Ross-Ade Stadium is the most underrated environment in all of college football. When you get that stadium hosting a good team under the lights, it can get really loud, really raucous, and be a really difficult place to play. And I love the matchup for Purdue. I think they have a really good shot at pulling off this upset. Mainly when I look at Notre Dame's offense, it has looked vanilla. They've been able to run the ball up the middle pretty well, but not with a whole lot of misdirection. And I think a lot of times when they run the ball, you can tell when it's coming. The passing game has really struggled to find any sort of footing. They seem to have a deficit of talent at the pass catcher position, and I was really excited about Riley Leonard, their addition at quarterback. I thought his legs could really open up this offense, And his legs have honestly been the only good thing about this offense, because the passing game, like I said, has not gotten going. And now he's revealed that he has suffered a shoulder injury to his non-throwing injury that's going to bother him this game. And now he faces a Purdue defense, you know, that hybrid defense that can sometimes be like a 3-2-5, can sometimes look like a 5-2-5. It can be a very difficult defense to read pre-snap. And they thrive on putting in guys in places where you don't expect them to be in order to force turnovers, in order to confuse the offensive line and get, you know, free runners to the quarterback and generate sacks that way. And so it's all about creating confusion and capitalizing on mistakes from the quarterback. And now they're playing a team whose passing game has really struggled, quarterback who's banged up, and a quarterback who is probably lacking a lot of confidence. And Notre Dame has not been a team under Marcus Freeman to see a lot of creativity on the offensive side of the ball. And I really like their offensive line, but outside of that, I think their offensive skill position players are lacking. And I think with an extra week of preparation, and now in their second season under this defense with Ryan Walters, I think Purdue is going to tee off on Riley Leonard. I think they are going to find ways to get him under duress all day long. They're going to try their best to take away the run game. And yeah, that might leave a couple guys running wide open downfield, and Riley Leonard might be able to connect on a couple of those. But all in all, I think that Purdue is going to know how to slow down this Notre Dame offense. And on the flip side, Notre Dame's defense is still good, but they did not come up with stops when they really needed against Northern Illinois. They clamped down a little bit in the middle of the game there, but for the majority of the first half, and then at the very end of the game when it mattered most, they could not get off the field, they could not stop the run, and they left receivers open. And I think another problem with facing Purdue this weekend is they did not show a ton on tape against Indiana State, and I think there is just still so much more we have to learn about this Purdue offense. Hudson Card is able to make every throw you want him to at the college game. Devin Mockabee is an extremely underrated running back, and Purdue as a team has a lot more pass catchers than I gave him credit for coming into this season. And I think it's going to be hard to defend this Purdue team not knowing exactly who their playmakers are. And their offensive line is great. It's really one of the most underrated units in all of college football and one of the better offensive lines in the Big Ten, especially considering the way that Iowa's and Michigan's and Wisconsin's offensive lines have struggled so far. Purdue might even be able to control the line of scrimmage against Notre Dame this weekend. So I think when you are trying to rebuild a program, especially a program like Purdue, who hasn't had a ton of success if you look at the broad scope of college football history, when you're trying to rebuild a program like this, you get a small handful of opportunities where all eyes are on you, where all the fans are invested, and they're ready for a big win. You only get a few opportunities like this, and this is one for Purdue. That's not to say if they lose this game that they won't have another opportunity to really get the fans to buy in and really make the nation pay attention to them, but you only get a handful before your school won't let you get any more opportunities. And I think that Ryan Walters, coming off of a bye week, understands the opportunity in front of him, and I know that his team is going to be ready to play. I know this is going to be a really difficult place to play at Ross-Ade Stadium, and I can imagine that Notre Dame isn't really feeling up for this game. They put so much into that road trip to Texas A&M and squeaked out with an ugly win, and then they came back home and just got booed by their own fans, got beat up along the line of scrimmage against the team from the MAC. They are reeling. Every Notre Dame fan in the world is calling for Marcus Freeman's job, wants to see a different quarterback, doesn't know about the direction of the program. There is a lot of noise going around. And I feel like when that's the case, you really just want to play a bad team and beat up on them and get your footing back. And that's not what this weekend is going to be against Purdue. They're playing a team that is out for blood in a really difficult environment. And I think that Purdue pulls off the upset. I think this is the beginning of the end for Marcus Freeman. I think he's a great guy, could be a great coach, but geez, he just has not come up when the school has really needed him to, especially at the beginning of the year. If they drop this game, that would be his 10th loss as the head coach at Notre Dame, his 6th in September. I think Ryan Walters puts Purdue football on the map this weekend. And you know, the team that was picked last to win the Big Ten, which is still beyond me how people could pick that. But I think this is a statement win for the Purdue football program under Ryan Walters in the beginning of even bigger things to come for Purdue. And that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I've been your host, Sean. Really appreciate everyone and anyone that's out there listening. Hope you can sit back and relax and enjoy another great weekend of college football ahead of us. And I will catch you here next week to recap it all over again and look forward to another great weekend in college football. Stay safe, everyone, and I will catch you here next week.